It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am. Disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down. An American loser the day I was born.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of American Loser. It is the podcast that puts the spotlight firmly on second place. Where else could we be recording this very fine episode in a very fine studio? Where else could we be, Dad?
No other place other than the shared universe here in Eatontown, New Jersey.
Mike and Ming taking great care of us. Kahuna behind the ones and twos. How are you, pal?
I'm good, man. Always good to have you.
I hear you. Now, the order that we record in is not usually the order that the episodes come out in. So we're going to make an adjustment to the Jim Thorpe episode that's going to be coming out the week of the Super Bowl. But you have never seen like, and we're out of here. Anyway, and he died. But good night. We're out of here. So, we got bum rushed the last time, man. But nobody's coming in after us here. I'm real sorry to Mike and Ming for holding up another customer like that. But I'm excited today, Dad, because guess who we have in studio?
Oh, in studio, none other than...
Podcast legend, the Prince of West Orange.
That's right.
None other than Shining Wizards, Kevin Joseph Garib.
Jesus.
The one, the only.
Wow. Man, it's awesome to be here, man. KP, Larry, thank you so much. Kahuna!
See?
Hey!
Thanks, man.
Kev is one of the most important friends I ever made in my life. One of the first guys that really kind of... I actually met him through a podcast. This is a true story. He is saddled with me forever because of a podcast.
That's true.
All right.
What's the name of your podcast for those who are curious?
We are the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast.
Now, it is a Ku Klux Klan themed show, correct?
That's right.
You know, I had some questions.
That's right.
Yeah, pay no attention to
that. We're Shining Wizards. They're Grand Wizards.
Because I'm not going to lie. When he said it earlier, I was like... Is that a Ku Klux Klan joke?
No.
And then you're like, oh, that's the name of your podcast.
And a Shining Wizard is a wrestling move.
A badass wrestling move.
Okay. It is a running knee to the head while a wrestler is on the ring, just kind of like sitting up or kneeling. You run and you knee him in the head. So that is the Shining Wizard.
Sounds like fun.
It is.
Oh, yeah. It's a good podcast too, man. I really like the whole crew over there. They've been kind enough to have me on as a guest a couple of times. And dude, they're killing it with numbers right now. So this is actually a get for us, Cahoons. All right, we're borrowing from their listenership right now. I'm pretty happy.
Well, we are, we are shared on the same platform,
Shining Wizards Network. That's where you can find this show and a bunch of other quality shows on that one, man. But I'm stoked you're here, buddy. And also, Kev, real quick, what are you drinking today?
I am drinking a Ross Brewing Fine IPA.
Indeed. The Navasink IPA.
The Navasink IPA, baby.
Kev, I never get to say this before. The official beer of American Loser.
All right. There
wow.
It is.
Ross Brewing's Navasink IPA.
That's big, buddy.
It is.
I'm so proud of you.
It's available in New York right now. They're working on a couple other states, but take a look for them. Follow them on social media if you can. Ross Brewing's doing some cool stuff.
It's very good. I'm on my second solo cup's worth.
Yeah. When you guys hear a door creaking and slamming shut, that means that Kev went up to go get himself another solo cup. So.
That's right.
Back to the kegerator.
Of Ross Brewing.
And if you feel like planning a podcast, we actually have a very limited time only. We have a kegerator of Ross Brewing beer. So, well, if you want it.
I think they're going to keep that keg. That's going to be a regular thing.
Is it really now?
I'm hoping. Because,
okay, cool.
If not.
Because you work here now. Well, so
I technically am hired by Ross Brewing in order to do this. But no, it's cool, too, because the beer is good. LP,
it really is.
You're not even an IPA guy, and you're kind of digging
right.
This.
It's absolutely all right. And then, again, I'm not an IPA first call, but... this is all right. Past me.
I've come to the conclusion, though, that... Beer is not the problem. There was that quote from, I think it was Homer Simpson, beer, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Mm. Yeah, that's about right.
It's a quote from Benjamin Franklin.
Not necessarily in that order.
That's also true, Kevin. There's another quote, too, that I think you would like on this one, Shining Wizards, Kevin.
All right.
That, I believe it was Benjamin Franklin.
Proof.
Beer is proof that God loves us. Yeah.
I'll allow it.
Pretty good quote, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
So it's hard to argue without. Now, what you want to stay away from is what they, obviously whiskey has been regulated. nowadays, right? Which gets us into our topic today a little bit. But back in the day, old school whiskey and old school hard liquors and stuff like that was known as, do you know the nickname for it, Dad?
White Lightning, Moonshine.
White Lightning, the specifically old cowboy whiskey was known as the Rot Gut.
Rot Gut whiskey.
Yeah, the Rot Gut. And this loser today has a little bit of experience with that. Is that fair
to
say?
The cowboys, yep. The old west.
Well, they always say don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. And today we have a good story and no way to really prove whether or not any of it's true. Okay? We're getting a little bit of a bullshit artist here. Kev, are you familiar with the literary term unreliable narrator?
I'm not too bright, KP.
You're very smart.
So no, I'm not.
The most highly educated person in the room, and he's going to put himself down like that.
I'm not familiar with the term.
I completed elementary school, damn it.
That's right, right, Kahuna. You sure did.
I got that 8th grade diploma hanging yeah. probably on the wall.
Well, not for that. An unreliable narrator, for those that don't know, is a literary device that gets used a lot in TV and films and stuff like that, too. And it's where the person telling the story is not really entirely accurate, or maybe they're, you know, maybe they're fabricating a couple of details
here and there.
So, now this is, it's an interesting move here, because you'd think it would be a bad thing that we can't prove whether or not this person's life is true or not. But it's kind of exactly how today's loser intended it. Her story is half factual, half legendary, but 100% loser. Ladies and gentlemen, Martha Jane Canary, or Cannery, depending on how you want to pronounce it, also known as, more famously, Calamity Jane.
Calamity Jane.
So, off the top of your head, Cahoons, have you heard of Calamity Jane before?
The name, yeah. That rings a bell, actually.
Oh, totally.
And not just bullshit. Like, actually. Like, that does sound familiar, but I don't know from where.
Well, she's interesting because, as we're going to cover, she's a real-life person. Absolutely true. But her exploits get lied about all the time, kind of sometimes by her doing the lying, and other times people just telling stories. And she's actually been portrayed in books, the dime store novels, like we were going to talk about in a little bit, Dad, and all sorts of other stuff here. But the movies and TV portrayals of her built into this legend, so her own legend isn't even correct. We're going to get into that towards the very end here, but worth noting, when people become famous out of nowhere, like when Kevin's podcast popped for the first time, people started Googling him. They said, what do we know about this guy? And like, well, he went to Towson.
That's right.
Let's see what else. He's got a giant peen.
Legendary.
Massive.
Now, why do you know that?
I used to have tonsils before.
Ben Franklin wrote a poem about it or something. It was one of Ben Franklin's many famous inspiring quotes. My peen is neither the problem or the solution.
Yeah, we used Kev's peen to discover lightning. We wrap a key around it.
He's still here.
And just stick him out of the wall. All right, that might be the hardest we've ever gotten the Kahuna to laugh on the show.
And now I have superpowers.
That's
Well, that's when after the lightning struck.
That's exactly right.
Kevin Greer, first human to ever get syphilis from electricity.
We talked about white lightning before. You're looking at him.
I am white lightning.
I am white lightning.
Oh, man. Kev, I knew you were going to be money. But it's always weird because when the people become famous, the first thing that the journalists start to try to do is they try to dig up, well, what do we know about this person? But everything we know about Calamity Jane comes from her. And again, as we covered, she's an unreliable narrator. A lot of this stuff is larger than life because she wanted to, you know, try to sell her image a little bit, or people trying to profit off of her, you know. Literally like what we just did there, just I'm not even kidding here. Us just riffing about Kevin's, you know, fantastic penis is it's actually weird because we started embellishing details there.
And
all
right.
But all someone has to do is hear. And like if they were in the hallway, like this Kevin Garifo guy, he must have a piece and a half on him, huh?
That's right.
And then that rumor gets carried around, and all of a sudden, that's your new reputation.
Please spread it
far and wide.
Far and wide of the shared universe. We're sharing too much in this universe.
Well, that's where she gets really fun, man, because she's her own unreliable narrator. She wrote her own. Well, didn't really write because we're going to cover this.
Yeah,
she was illiterate.
Right.
But she probably spoke at length to a ghostwriter. You know, she had a Kahuna handling the sound and everything for her. But she would write this autobiography that was a quote written by her, but it was made into a pamphlet that Jane intended to sell and tour at these dime museums across the country. Dad, real quick, what is a dime museum?
Well, dime museums were something that gained great popularity in the towards the end of the 19th century. So we're talking like, you know, 1850s on up into the early 1900s. And it was considered lowbrow entertainment. In other words, it was for the unwashed masses,
kind of like
you will.
Professional wrestling. Right. Right?
I was going to say like the tabloids of today, maybe.
Absolutely.
Like Us Weekly, or
absolutely, yeah. That it's the newspapers that you see at the checkout line in the supermarket, kind of a thing. That, but these were actually museums that would set themselves up for distinctly different. They were distinctly different from the, you know, what we might think of museums today, which was, you know, the highly educated, and you're going in to appreciate fine art or some historical things. These were more in the bigger cities, the urban cities. A lot of immigrants settled. They were basically cheap entertainment, and they started to really gain great popularity. But what I thought was neat, too, is that they were really the starting places for a lot of the careers of many notable vaudevillians. So these dime museums, which was a cheap entertainment. So you'd have the freak shows and, you know, the bearded lady and General Tom Thumb. Some of the biggies.
The man-eating chicken.
The man-eating chicken, all that type of stuff. In New York City, there was really a very famous dime museum. It was Barnum's, P.T. Barnum's American Museum. And he kind of introduced this whole thing called edutainment, where they would have these...
Oh, my God, that's what we do here on this show.
That's right. These different freak shows and circus performances and everything else. But... It was really the birthplace of vaudeville. Guys like Harry Houdini and some very famous
Loserception already.
Yeah, there you go. Damn. Loserception again.
That wasn't even planned. We plan these sometimes.
Yeah, but you know, that's where they started to get.
But wait, didn't we mention P.T. Barnum in another episode?
He has come up in the past, because Barnum was...
Come up a few times.
He was in the Houdini episode.
He was bigger than life. I mean, for the time period, too, he was very influential with... you know, the Civil War era, New York City politics.
Well, his museum gets broken into during the draft riots, and that's why you can see like an elephant running around on Main Street. You know, was kind of,
I mean, it was cheap entertainment for not necessarily the hoi polloi, the highbrow society. It was somebody with a dime could gain entry in there, and
not for the hoity-toities.
Be entertained by the freak shows or the magicians or whatever the oddities, we'll be polite and call it oddities.
So there very well might have been someone saying, step right up, step right up.
Absolutely. Like, and they would have,
not even far
they would have
that.
Bands out front to draw people in to come see the show.
Come see Geronimo's girlfriend's hair. You know, that's the kind of stuff that they were popping out. But it was cool. They were popular. And Jane was going to capitalize on her fame, which we're going to get into. And we're going to kind of let the audience decide what they think is real. Cahoons, I'm going to ask you to start thinking of the casting couch segment for this. But I want you to know that she has been portrayed so many times by so many very well-known actresses.
One of them, she was actually portrayed by the woman who played Lily Munster. I was reading about her when you told me the
Yvonne DiCarlo, right?
Yeah. She played Calamity Jane.
Dude, that's not even the weirdest one. That's how weird it gets.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, a lot of female actors that
tried to portray her down through
the years. But again, as her, every time her story is told, it's embellished and it just kind of...
And that's just carrying on Jane's tradition.
Right. I mean, this illiterate... Jane was illiterate to start with, and now she's telling her life story to somebody else to write it down. And it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And she's embellishing it to begin with. So, you know, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
She's got a little pro wrestler to her where she's her own hype woman.
Well, I mean, Calamity.
Right. Come on. Starting there.
That's pro wrestling at its finest.
That's from parts unknown.
From parts unknown.
Calamity Jane.
Well, as best we can tell, Jane was born on May 1st, 1852, near Princeton, Missouri.
Yeah, now that was almost a Jersey time.
Yeah, you got excited
when
for
I'm
a
reading,
second.
I'm reading. Where was she born? Princeton.
Ah.
In Mercer County. Yes, yes. Missouri.
So. Yeah, Missouri fakes out everybody because they're like, oh, well, we're going to name our city Kansas City. But we're Missouri. Eat shit. We have a football team.
Missouri is the state of cheap pops.
That's a
We're going to fool you into thinking that we're important.
That's a gimmick in itself right there. That's Well, now, the typical American family here she grew up in. Dad is an alcoholic, degenerate gambler, and mom spent some time working as a hooker. So,
got to bring home the bacon somehow.
I hear you. Well, Jane was the firstborn, and she was the oldest of six siblings. Okay. Now, in 1865, what's going on in the country in 1865, Dad? Is there?
It's the close of the Civil War, Kev.
Perhaps yeah, some bloodshed?
Absolutely. Hard times.
Well, now it is hard times, and now you have a chance for a better life here. So the father, even though he's a degenerate alcoholic gambler, he's deciding he's going to relocate the family via a wagon train, kahuna.
Oh, no.
Does this sound familiar? To Montana. All right.
Yeah, and to be a gambler, I mean, he's rolling the dice with the whole family on one more shot at a better life and load up the wagons.
Yeah.
We're going.
It's I wonder, too, if the wife was like, and there's no booze out there, so you're going to have to be productive. But during the trip, Jane's mother, Charlotte, dies of pneumonia, which is wild because as we covered in the Donner Party episode, these trails out west, we look out on the parkway and sometimes you see some trash on the side. I just imagine the graves that you're passing.
Yeah.
Everybody that's dying on the trail, man. This ain't an
Good
easy trip.
God.
Yeah. It's pretty gross. It's like mile markers, but with bodies.
oh, my God.
So they get out there, and the trails are heading out west, blah, blah, blah. The Cannery family, we're going to keep calling them the Canneries. That's how I've always heard their name said. It's spelled Canary, but Cannery. I understand why you'd want a slightly different, you know. It's like our friend Kevin, he calls himself Goatee, but, you know, it's really pronounced Gootee. Yeah, you don't want a name with goo in it. But he has a podcast. I won't plug it because I don't want you to listen to it. But the Cannery family reaches Salt Lake City, all right? And Jane's father begins his life over as a farmer, finally, Kevin.
Yep.
This guy's got his shit together.
Yep, he's going to make a go of it.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
got his 40 acres, and he's trying to be the straight and narrow guy with his 40-acre farm.
At what point does he become a Mormon? You said he went to Salt Lake City.
Well, he doesn't stick there. He's not there long enough, really, to do much of anything. He dies within the year.
Ah,
that's a shame.
So, yeah, it is. It's a downer. I'll put it that way. Well, now imagine
you're like Missouri.
Yeah. Well, now Jane is 15 years old?
I think she's maybe 14.
14,
maybe
15 years
15,
old.
Yeah.
And she is now in charge of her entire family.
Wow.
She's
right.
the oldest.
The remaining, yeah, she's the oldest. So now the other five siblings are
basically her kids.
Under, yeah.
Yeah,
she's taking charge.
You've heard of party of five. This is party of six.
Right.
So
wow.
They're in a weird spot with all that. Now, this is. Prepare for loserception, Kahuna. Jane is now in charge of her siblings, gets them all into a wagon on their way to Fort Bridger, the same fort that the Donner Party would utilize where they were given their bad maps and their bad advice. So, yeah, Fort Bridger's a real thing. And again, that's our loserception here. The Donner Party and Calamity Jane colliding in history over this one specific... and I don't even know the time frames that they were there. I don't think it lines up at all. But just the idea that that was the rallying point. You know?
Just damn.
That was a spot on the map. I mean, yeah. you're going into virtually uncharted territory.
Well, we got
at least.
Indian territory. We've got
Fort Bridger was
brutal,
at least a spot
winters.
On the map.
Yeah, you're going to want to know where you can get a hot meal.
Right.
So, now Jane gets the family out to Piedmont, Wyoming. And like we said, Jane's about 15 years old at the time when she becomes the breadwinner for the five siblings. She worked any job that would pay. Kevin, have you ever been in a capacity to hire somebody?
No.
But
that's not true. Bartending.
Well, you have an interesting resume, too, because I know that you're a podcast host, stand-up comic. You swing that big peen hammer we keep talking about. And then also, you did social media work for a couple different companies.
Yeah.
I know you've worked in local government before. You're a well-rounded cat.
It's weird that none of it stuck. But yeah, I've had jobs all over the place.
Yeah, well, so. Check this out for a resume here. Let's see if this is let's see if Calamity Jane can compete with Shining Wizards, Kevin.
Oh, she's got me beat. Looking after five kids.
She's looking after five kids, but guess how she's doing it? She'll work as a cook. She'll work as a dishwasher. All right, and these are all things. These are jobs she held. Cook, dishwasher, dance hall girl.
All right.
Yeah, that's like dance hall girl is interesting because I think that's part hooker, part like shot girl.
That's your day job.
Part Fallout Boy song.
That's a. And then also just to round it out, cook, dishwasher, dance hall. These are all things that'll have you in like a tavern like setting until their last job, mule and ox team driver. To quote our pal Big Rich from Jersey, when you look at a picture of. Jane Cannery, who would become Calamity Jane. You look at her and you say, she's a handsome woman.
She wasn't noted for her beauty, but at the same time, there wasn't too many job opportunities for a female out in the West at that time either.
Fella.
Well, there's even a line, too. We're going to talk about a person that she winds up meeting and becoming friendly with in a certain infamous town out west in South Dakota. But worth noting is that... the prostitution game out there, if you will, was very popular, because there wasn't a whole lot of legality behind it. But there was one madam in particular we're going to talk about later who had a thing where she was very attractive herself, and she preferred to work with very attractive women in her establishment. Who wouldn't want pretty girls to run a business like that?
Yeah, especially out west when the ratio of male to female
it's slim pickings.
There's not a whole lot out there to choose from. So,
well, they told us in the Navy it was called boot camp goggles, or ship goggles, which is where you'd be on a ship with a bunch of dudes, and the one girl that was on the ship who was probably like a 6, back home or something like that, if you're out at sea long enough, becomes a 10.
Plus.
Yes. And then also, and I'm not even going to lie, I know women that specifically said that they love that part of it because their value goes up through the roof. So it's an interesting thing here. But it winds up coming down to it that you can't get a whole lot of very pretty girls out in the West here because it's slim pickings, like we said. And then also, if Kevin and I are on a wagon train,
we're
coming into town, right? And we're sitting there and it's like, listen, you can either bang this, this homely looking girl or each other. You have no choice.
That's it.
What are you going to do? And I was like, all right, I've spent enough time with Kev. Came here from Colorado together.
We're not that close.
That's it. You either go broke back or broke.
That's
I like it.
That was a good line, buddy.
That was solid.
Well, Jane is, she's doing all these jobs. She finally finds what is going to become one of her callings, if you will, in 1874. And she begins working as a scout over at Fort Laramie. Okay. This job is what starts the transition of Jane into the legend, and she becomes more popular. All the stuff that's about to wind up in her dime store novels, that's all about to come out here in spades.
Yeah, just so, for the listeners, too. I mean, Jane is actually her middle name.
Born Martha.
Born Martha, but Jane is her middle name, and that's what the handle that is about to be applied to her is Calamity Jane.
Which is hilarious. So now, the way she gets the name, too, we're going to talk about here in a second. But Martha Cannery, not exactly a great stage name. Is that fair to say, Dad?
Yeah, it doesn't have quite the ring to it.
All right. So Garifo goes, first of all, I mean, my first name's Kevin. It's Kevin Patrick Burke, right? But I've met other Kevin Patricks, and I know far too many Kevins in comedy. So I sort
of the Irish. I mean, they only have a very limited number of names to hand out when the birth of a male child. So Patrick is one of the biggies. But
Kahuna, you're going to think I'm making this up. My father, I think, was it mom that was pushing for my other possible name?
Well, we were looking through various books, but...
I was almost named Tyrone.
Get the... What?
It's an Irish name.
It's an Irish name.
No
it was,
shit.
It was culturally appropriated.
There you go.
Dude, could you imagine if I came in and you're like, oh, it's Tyrone
Hello,
Burke?
Hello, welcome to this episode of American Loser. My name is Tyrone Burke. Oh, my God. I'm just going to call you Tyrone for the rest of this.
Well, I also had another weird one, too, is that a friend of mine, his name was Daryl Tate. One of my great pals. I love him to death. On the USS Kearney. And they told me that when the orders came through, the way that he spells Daryl, he didn't spell it the traditional way. He spelled it D-A-R-R-E-L-L. And one of the chiefs was looking at him and goes, we got this guy coming in. And now Daryl Tate, good old country boy from Georgia. Okay, you know, tall, like as pale as me, you know, and funny guy, very handy guy. But the chief's looking through the orders. He goes, "We got this kid Darrell Tate coming in."
Darrell.
So imagine they're sitting there waiting for a black dude to show up to pick up at the airport, and then all of a sudden, just country bumpkin Tate comes in.
That's me. I'm Darrell.
Darrell. It's Darrell.
It's Darrell.
And Darrell.
It's Darrell, sir.
And Tate, if you're listening to this one, pick your head up, okay? You always lean your head up. But again, Martha Cannery, not a great stage name. She's going to start going by Jane Mosley at this point while she's serving as a scout during a military patrol. Now, they send this military patrol. What are the indigenous people of the plains? How are they handling this westward expansion?
They're not really happy about it. They're coming in on their homelands, actually. And
yeah, and they've been
pushed before. In a later
episode,
we'll find that actually they're in Indian territory.
We're on their turf.
Right. They're on their homelands. No
exactly.
Doubt.
But it's pretty wild that way because, like we said, she starts going by Jane. She's going to get this new name after this bloody skirmish that they're on this patrol. They're out for a couple of days on a horseback, and Jane finally gets her new moniker. You don't got to worry about locking it, Kev. But Jane gets her new moniker here. This patrol is under the command of Captain Egan. Okay, nice Irish boy.
Nice Irish boy.
Thank you, sir. Egan's a former bar that Kevin and I used to hang out in West Orange. But Captain Egan's party gets ambushed about a mile and a half from their post. They're on their way back. They're done with their patrol, and they get ambushed here. Now, during the actual mission, they had six soldiers were killed. So, they saw some heavy action. Now, Captain Egan gets shot, and Jane's out riding as the scout. She's out in front of everybody. Now, she turns around as soon as she hears the gunshot. She sees that Captain Egan is about to fall off of his horse because he's been struck. And she takes off like a bat out of hell, rides up next to him, catches him before he can fall off the horse, throws him over the front of her saddle, and then rides him the next mile and a half safely back to the post.
So she basically saves his life.
Yep.
In action.
Yep. Now, when the guy's healing up, he respectfully but laughingly joked, "I name you Calamity Jane, the heroine of the plains." And Jane goes, "And ever since that day, I've just been going by Calamity Jane."
Yeah, now the only problem with that whole story is we got that story from Calamity Jane.
Yep.
That there's no way of verifying that that's actually the way it went down. But it's a good story.
We have a couple sayings on the show. Don't fuck with TR, all right? Don't mess with Boston will get you, okay? We've learned that. And then also, not for nothing, no, you can't trust somebody who gives himself their own nickname, okay? That's just kind of what it is.
Well, so. that was her... that was her take on how she got the name Calamity Jane. There were others, but
there were two others that were pretty good. Now, Kev, you ever throw some game at a damsel at a bar?
Always.
And does always.
Does she ever warn you that you're not ready for her?
Yeah, they all do pretty much.
I love how you have to think about it. That's you're like, it. Wait, that's all the time.
I'm thinking like, oh, this one did, this one did, that one did, this one did. Yeah, so yeah, yes.
Well, Kev knows a few of my former paramours as well. So, there was one girl who was telling me, she goes, "I don't think you can handle me." And she was right.
Did she snap? did she snap while she was doing it?
I'm pretty sure she's in the Middle East right now killing people.
So. Good for her.
Yeah. But anyway... anytime these guys at the fort, Fort Laramie was the fort over there where she was working at. As, by the way, she was also working a little bit as a hooker herself now.
Dancehall gal.
Yeah, dancehall. She's throwing some stuff out there. Now, LP's got some notes for us here in a second on that, because I thought this was worth noting. Now, Fort Laramie was in itself, I think it's still standing. I'm not actually sure. But there was a three-mile hog ranch where Jane worked as a prostitute, hanging out with the local soldiers.
Yeah, and it's very nice that it's been National Register of Historic Places is the 3 Mile Hog Ranch outside of Fort Laramie. That 3 miles outside of Fort Laramie, there was a saloon and shop, store, that kind of a thing, that where the soldiers could go and...
Sounds like the Navy Exchange and MWR bar I used to hang out at in Jacksonville.
Get a drink. And, of course, out back there was some other festivities that could be acquired for the right price. And, again, there's such a lack of female accompaniment that even if you're somebody's got a mug like Calamity Jane, that she's still able to, she's got the work in parts that is still worth paying for. So
now, again, we keep, because my favorite part of the episode and the research was writing down all the actresses that have played different versions of her. And I can tell you that depending on, now if you guys watch Deadwood, like I loved the show Deadwood on HBO, she was played by Robin Weigert, and that was what's considered one of the most accurate portrayals of her. And she was not, I think she gets into like a lesbian relationship on the show, and they talk about, it was a whole weird thing where she never really had a guy around. She was very rough looking, she was dirty all the time, very drunk, but if the some of the other actresses were playing her that we're going to cover later, I'm going to remind you that we said this. The line at the 3 Mile Hog Ranch to get any sort of time with her would have been 3 miles long itself. So, but yeah, so she's
yeah, and the whole term hog ranch is just a slang expression that there was any number of different so-called hog ranches along the trails in Wyoming that was just a place that you know what you were going
right.
there for.
That's
I didn't even put that together.
Yeah.
Oh, so a hog ranch was like, All right. I'm picking up what you're putting down there.
So, right. There you go.
Is it bad that now I get it?
I didn't get Kuna, I didn't get it either.
No, like it, now it's clicking. I'm
okay.
Well, you know what it is? Here's why you were confused, because it's a 3 mile hog ranch and you have a hog and a half.
No, that's not true. All right.
So, well, like, that's the end.
Well, a hog ranch seems like a feasible thing that someone in like the Midwest, the West, or Midwest would have. Are we there still?
I'll tell you what. It kind of has a vibe of, say, a cat house.
All right.
Which we're going to explain.
We'll get into later.
The etymology of that.
I'm excited.
In a second.
Yeah. I'm excited.
I told you it was going to be a good one. Yeah. We really don't do bad episodes here. We have ones where it doesn't go as cool as we want it to, but this one is going to be a home run. So James, she's an interesting lady here. Jane is making, you know, we can't prove that story is true, but what she would tell the guys at Fort Laramie is that whenever they were trying to get with her, like flirt with her a little bit, throw some game her way, she would say, "You are attempting to court Calamity herself." So then her nickname started to become Calamity. So she gave herself her own nickname, but like in a self-referential way. That it kind of took off from there. So they think that's what... Now, she was very popular on base. Why wouldn't you like this chick? She can cook, she can clean, she can scout, she can drive your mule and ox team, and she'll blow you.
Yeah. she's one of the boys. I mean, she's...
She really is, yeah.
She is one of the boys, but at the same time, she's got the body parts that make her not one of the boys and a little more friendlier than the boys.
So can I ask you guys something?
Talk to me.
Do you think the fact that she was trying to give herself her own nickname was trying to build up her own reputation?
Totally.
So that people would just know who they're dealing with when they see Calamity Jane?
Absolutely. Right. And it works.
Okay. So there's something to be said for that, I guess.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You called it before a stage name, and she's not on the stage at this particular point, but she's gaining a reputation just by her name.
Well, you got to have a rep to hang out on base like this. Now, what's even more hilarious, the term bullshit artist comes up a lot. Like, Kev and I, you know, Kev does stand-up as well. You know, we're hanging out with comics all the time. Nobody's full of more shit than stand-up comics.
That's true.
Yeah. It's pretty remarkable. So they love to talk about themselves, put themselves over, and you just feel like, oh, this guy's a nice guy, but he's a bullshit artist. So Jane's funny, right? Everybody likes her on the base because she gets drunk all the time. She's very generous. Anytime she has money, she's buying the boys drinks and stuff. So why wouldn't she be popular on base?
Yeah, she was also popular on base because a lot of times she would not collect for the sexual favors that she just bestowed on somebody. So it was a freebie.
Yeah, she was a quality gal. She was a
philanthropist.
That's a
philanthropist.
No, you got it. That was it.
Beautiful.
Stick to your guns.
All right, I'm done.
Believe in yourself.
I'm out. Have a great show, guys.
You know what it is? Kev's usually a Bud Light guy, but that is the Ross Brewing Navasink IPA slowly working its way through his brain.
I'm Navasinking, baby.
the pun master. But not for nothing here. Some of the officers on base, when they were asked, like, you know, she's cool, everybody likes Jane, but somebody goes, oh, is it true what Jane would say? And officers on the base actually even wrote written accounts where they spoke to local papers and stuff, saying Jane was merely just like a likable hangaround. You know what I mean? She never saw an Indian fight. She never even witnessed a lynching or anything like that. All these stories in her dime store novel to get her that tour, right? She was making shit up because she wanted to bolster her reputation, like Kev was saying. So, and then, like we said, she's words to describe her, by the way, I thought were devilish and notorious. Those were words that are getting thrown around about her. But like we said, she's a popular chick. It's easy to see why she would be. Kev, off the top of your head, do you know the definition of the word calamity?
Just from what I've seen on cartoons in the early 90s. No, I don't.
Well,
nonsense?
The definition of calamity is an event causing distress or sudden damage, also known as a disaster.
Ooh.
So if a girl introduced you, hey, what's up? I'm the disaster. And then you'd be like, well, I'm the situation.
The master of disaster.
Folks around here call me the grenade. I know her, actually. She's very sweet and very pretty in real life. Anyhow, another story that Jane liked to tell, and by the way, this is hilarious too, because there was a famous picture of her that we pulled up from the Wikipedia page that was literally the photo is known, the description of it, you know, Calamity Jane smokes a cigar while making breakfast. She's
a woman after my own heart.
Yeah, she ain't fucking around, dude.
Out in the kitchen, cooking up breakfast, smoking on a stogie.
Yep, it is what it is. Now, Coons, I'm going to ask you just to pull up on the big screen because I want to show off some of the actresses that have played her too, mm-hmm. so we can try to draw a comparison between what she really looks like and what
Hollywood has. Yeah,
because Ivanka Karloff, that's a good name right there from the Munsters, because she's a very attractive woman. And
I saw some other names that stuck out.
Oh, well, there's some good ones, buddy. So, now not for nothing, Dad.
I got a personal fave too that we'll talk about. But
no way.
Go ahead.
All right, I'm excited. Okay, LP opening up.
It's mom, right? Mom.
No, right.
But so now this other story, and this is the one, because this is kind of the break in the story here, because this is where people really know her from. But another story that Jane has, it tells of her, and by the way, she's always the hero in her own stories. I'm sure you picked up on that, Dad.
Right. No, absolutely.
You know, it's
right.
I came in. It's almost a Cliff Clavin to her.
Right.
Hey, ever tell you, Sammy, about the time I went over to Deadwood Camp, saved a wagon train from a couple of Plains Indians? Yeah, I tell you that.
Yeah.
I'm watching too much Cheers lately.
Yeah, that's the third time you brought up Cheers to me today.
Here we were, Indians all around us.
It's where
trying to tell us something.
I said to myself, self, I said.
Yeah, that Florida, let me tell you. Here's the story that Jane has. She bravely swims across a dangerous and freezing river in order to deliver these important dispatches critical to the U.S. cavalry. All right. Like we said, she's always the hero in her own stories. And while she's recuperating from an illness that she acquired from her heroic endeavor, she holds up at Fort Laramie. Okay. And she then, when she's there, is a wagon train comes into town with a couple of people on it. These are more names that I think, if you guys know Calamity Jane, you know these other names, you just don't know why you know them. So, Kev, off the top of your head, I'll tell you what, I'm going to ask Kahuna first. I'm going to be tough on Kahuna. Charlie Utter, you ever heard of him?
No, not even.
Known as Colorado Charlie?
No.
Ah, good old
CC. That doesn't ring a bell?
Not even a little.
He's not the one that's going to ring it for you. What about James Butler Hickok?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I know
also,
that name too.
Also, you want to talk about a stage name? What do you think is James Butler Hickok's stage name?
I know that.
Talk to me.
It's Wild Bill, right?
Wild Bill Hickok.
Wild Bill.
You want a good nickname, man? Oof, that's the one. That really is the one. So, by the way, if you look at him too, and you just look at like the picture, because I believe that's a photograph of him.
That's a pro wrestler right there, if I've ever seen one.
Literally, he looks like he should be Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yeah.
You know? But he's a handsome guy.
Yeah.
There's actually a little Larry Burke to him, if I'm looking at him. You ever think about growing
your
hair?
He's got hair, though.
That stash.
He's got hair that he can grow out.
I'll tell you what, man. If you had my hair and I had your mustache, man, we'd have been something. But Dad, just briefly here, this Wild Bill Hickok wagon train is now coming through Fort Laramie. And it's not really his train. He's not running the train.
No, the other guy, Utter, I believe, is the
Charlie Utter,
wagon master.
He is that. But it's Wild Bill is a celebrity already.
Absolutely, he's already a folk hero of the American West, if you will.
Let's not burn him because I think he would be fun to revisit for his own solo episode.
Absolutely.
But let's tell the audience a little bit about this guy.
Well, he's just a folk hero. He's a drover. He's had been a wagon master. He's a Civil War veteran, a soldier, a spy, a scout, a lawman, a gunfighter.
An actor?
A gambler, a showman.
He was an actor.
Absolutely. So he is it, and he's a larger-than-life figure.
He was a Russian asset, too, wasn't he? Didn't he interfere in the elections? I can't remember. I might be confused.
That was on a down low. But yeah, he's a well-known celebrity, if you will. But his celebrity is by his own exploits, not because of his acting ability or something like that. But just
you shoot enough people, they're going to find out who you are.
Yeah, right. And he's again with a nickname, Wild Bill Hickok. It's still being disputed as to how many lives he actually took, but whether it was verified or in legend, if you will. But yeah, he's
you big. Want pageantry too, by the way, Kev?
Or in Us Weekly.
Us Weekly.
Us Weekly. There you go.
They'd be covering. Now, not for nothing, there's a little pageantry, almost like pro wrestling again, where he's got the big long mustache coming down. He's got really long hair down to his shoulders, and he carries twin pistols. All right, and he's got a badass reputation and a stage name. He is entrance music away from entering the King of the Ring tournament.
Oh, he probably had it. He probably had it at King of the Ring tournament.
Right. Number 30 in the Royal Rumble, Wild Bill Hickok.
Dude, I'm telling you right now, that's what like 90% of professional wrestlers look like nowadays. With the long hair and the mustache, and everyone's trying to go retro and look cooler with the mustache and the long hair, and he's got it. He's got the look right there.
He's not even retro at that. He's cutting edge.
He's intro.
Very good, sir. Very good.
I got nothing.
Real quick, what else do you have on Wild Bill? Because I do want to, because we're talking about him, because he's an exciting guy to talk about.
Well, he's going through Fort Laramie, and he's the guy that gets Jane. I think she was incarcerated at the time. She's in jail for whatever reason, whether it was, for whatever reason. But he kind of befriends her or takes pity on her or whatever. But she now comes into this wagon train that's heading north to the because gold has been found further north, and this wagon train is heading there, hopefully.
Getting out to Prospect.
To strike, right.
What's the name of the town that...
That would be...
West Orange.
West Orange, New Jersey.
That's it.
Right.
West Orange and a West Orange, Texas.
Go West, young man, go West. So we started in Orange, and now we're in West Orange.
Started in Princeton, now we're
here. Yeah.
That was an impulse. I'm sorry. Continue.
But what's the name of the town? An infamous town.
Yeah, Deadwood.
Deadwood, South Dakota.
That's right. And that's, again, now we're actually venturing into places that we're not supposed to be because that was really Indian territory. Mm-hmm. But gold was found. So,
It's our territory.
Screw the Indians. Yeah. It's us. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of the show Deadwood, which I loved on HBO, as we talked about. The problem with that was that there was a lot of things that were not technically historically accurate. Okay. We're doing great on time, by the way. We're kicking ass here today. There were a lot of things that weren't technically accurate that they had to do in order just to make the show more entertaining. But one of the things that they were very serious about was the camp was under the threat of Native American attack at all times, because they were not even – before they called it a town, you have to have a state in order to have a town. They were a territory back then. So literally they were just a camp. That was what it was. It was a camp. So these guys are on their way out there. It's like getting on the ground floor. Okay, so Hickok's on his way out there. Now, we were talking about – Calamity kind of bringing her own name up a little bit here. You got this famous gunfighter who's coming in Wild Bill Hickok. Colorado Charlie Utter, is a well-known guy too at this point, and he's been traveling with Hickok. That's like his man Friday, if you will. You would think that the arrival of this famous gunfighter in town is going to be a big deal, and it is. It's a huge deal. However, the July 15th, 1876 edition of the Black Hills Pioneer has a headline that read simply, Calamity Jane has arrived.
Right. So her fame and fortune, if you will, her story is big as well. So everybody knows Calamity Jane as this larger than life person. So she's, you know, her publicist, if you will, has already brought her fame and fortune to this little skis camp town of Deadwood.
Are we off the Bill Hickok thing? Can I throw my little tidbit of knowledge about Wild Bill Hickok?
Please do.
As we sit on this in this great studio on this poker table.
There you go.
I'm a big poker guy, huge poker fan, and there's a poker hand that's called Dead Man's Hand.
Correct.
Aces and Eights.
Yes.
Which is the hand that Wild Bill Hickok was holding. Correct. If you haven't already told us, I'm sorry, you probably have on this podcast.
No, we haven't gotten to it just yet, but it definitely is worth noting. And I think, LP, you had something else, too, on that.
I'm sorry, I didn't
know. No.
Shut up, Kevin.
That's perfect. God damn it. That's perfectly it.
Because I'm a huge poker guy, so when...
No, that's why it's perfect.
Yeah.
Yep.
We have to get into... So they're just coming into town right now. So this is where all these events, it's almost like every single day in Deadwood history is being made. It really is.
Right.
But
it's at this point in time, too, where Calamity Jane is infatuated with Wild Bill Hickok. She, you know, the sun and the
spoiler.
Moon and the stars all align around Wild Bill with as far as Calamity Jane. But that was not necessarily reciprocated, that Wild
there,
Bill.
There's reports.
There were, yeah, and to hear Calamity Jane say, at one time, they were actually married. But that was...
It gets,
unsubstantiated, if you will.
I'll tell you what, just because there's so much wild knowledge about this guy, and I want to make sure we just present the info in the right way so that the audience can kind of track with us. So they're getting into town, all right? And she's making the papers. And they're like, holy shit, Calamity Jane's in town, Wild Bill Hickok's in town, Colorado Charlie's in town. So if you're a local, you know, guy here sitting like, oh, how much longer is this going to be my town? Am I about to get kicked out of my own camp kind
it's
of a
Calamity
thing?
Con right now.
There's Calamity Con. that was money, my friend.
Yeah,
two
I mean,
gems.
If you're looking for characters, I mean, Deadwood is just absolutely chock full of characters.
Oh, that's why it made such a great show.
Absolutely. And
those are the cosplayers.
That's
these people are risking everything with the hope of making it rich with the gold.
Well, I'm going
to
ask.
Never mind that you're on Indian territory and you're not supposed to be there in the first place. But that's. You know, there's a huge risk and a huge gamble for everybody involved. So everybody is a character in Deadwood.
Very much so. Now, while we're bringing this next point up, Kahuna, do me a favor and just look up Deadwood on Google Maps and see how far it is from the studio, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
So not for nothing, Jane arrives into the camp. She rides in with Bill Hickok, who, like you said, she's got an infatuation with. Depending on what reports you're hearing from Bill Hickok, he either... Like you said, Dad, winds up being married to her in secret kind of a thing, or that they were in love with each other, or, as one person said, he had nothing, he didn't give two shits about Calamity Jane, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like when Kevin walks down the street in West Orange and women just start throwing themselves at him and he goes, please, ladies, all right? You know, I don't have time for this.
That's what we call the hog ranch.
Yeah, and Wild Bill's a good-looking guy. Let's face
it. We saw the picture.
And now you got Calamity Jane, who's noted for not being the most attractive female that God put on the face of the earth. And she is noted for... The being in buckskins in men's clothing kind of a thing that she's not.
She dresses like a dude.
She dresses like a dude.
Smokes cigars while she makes you breakfast kind of a thing.
Right.
Oh. Wild Bill, did you marry Calamity Jane? I ain't marry no butch.
Well, you brought it up here, Cahoons. So Deadwood, South Dakota, which a place I want to go one day.
All right.
Very badly. 27-hour drive?
27-hour drive. Doesn't look like traffic's too bad right now.
There we go.
It's Kahuna and the Channel 10 copter up here. Looks like it's gonna
be... Thanks, KP. So it's looking like traffic is going to be perfect for your excursion to Deadwood. It's about 1,007... I can't read numbers today. I had a stroke there. 1,778 miles.
Oh, that's Kahuna. That's our eyes in the sky. Traffic report.
Just drop me off somewhere in Missouri, please.
And that's Kahuna's report on Eyewitness News.
Well, we got
nice.
So 1,778 miles. there's no way we're going to have a Jersey connection with Deadwood, are we?
What the fuck?
Yeah, with Deadwood? Right? Yes, we will. Yes, we will.
What is this? Show your work, Larry.
There it is. Oh, there it is.
All right,
he's looking for proof positive, and we have it. Yeah, she arrives into Deadwood, and upon her arrival into this with this world-famous gunfighter and a whole big deal, she is quickly befriended by Miss Dora Dufresne, who winds up giving us our Jersey connection for this particular episode. Now, Miss Dora Dufresne was born in Liverpool, England, and immigrated to the United States with her parents. And once she stepped ashore into the great America, the family settles in our own, ready for the drum roll, none other than Bloomfield, New Jersey.
Oh, yes.
Where I have a show coming up.
So
every other Wednesday.
So
Miss Dora Dufresne, who goes on to become like a very, very famous, very profitable madam in Deadwood.
One of the most prosperous in all of Deadwood. And she was hot, they said.
In all of the Old West, more than likely that she would hold that particular title if we're talking about wrestling titles. She's Madam Supreme.
I believe she had a belt.
She had a belt. But she had a sketchy background too, because she took on the profession of prostitution at the tender age of 14. Yeah. Doing it for the army soldiers to begin with, and then she moves into Deadwood with the promise of the gold field, and she moves up there with all these other miners, all these men that were hoping to strike it rich.
You were talking to me earlier too, because you were saying that she does get into prostitution at age 14. She's known as very, very attractive.
Oh yeah, she's a looker.
Yeah, well, imagine that, an English girl showing up with a little Jersey attitude out in the West. You know, it's an appealing mix.
There you go.
But I do wonder about that, because it's always like, you ever hear people say, man, I was just born in the wrong generation? Well, if there's 14-year-olds doing prostitution, R. Kelly was just born in the wrong generation. Kahuna just left the room on that one. Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. Come back. I know he was your godfather.
I'm actually going to leave the room and get myself some of this beautiful Ross Brewing Company Navasink IPA.
There you go.
That was one of the dirtiest jokes we ever told on the show. I'm sorry. But that being said, we found that Jersey connection. I'm so happy about that. Now, we were talking about this earlier, though, too, that Jane's relationship with Wild Bill Hickok, cloudy at best. Is that fair to say, Dad?
Cloudy, yeah. I mean, it all depends on who you want to believe, whether it's Wild Bill or whether it's Calamity or who.
Coons, you ever have a girl that just... I'll tell you what. I had... did you ever make up a fake girlfriend?
No.
No, I won't lie.
Not you.
I did it... I exaggerated something once where it was a girl that I had a flirtation with. I said, oh, yeah, I've been dating her for, you know, weeks or something. Because, you know, there's like a nervous... there's a nervousness with stuff like that.
Yeah.
But now, according to who you ask...
For white dudes.
Kahuna is Chinese, by the way, if you guys don't know. I don't listen to this show.
Yes.
So there's a nervousness with this, but there's always, depending on who you ask about Calamity Jane's relationship with Wild Bill, you're going to get a different answer. There was a woman a couple of years later, in 1941, I believe it was, who came out claiming to be the daughter of both Calamity Jane and Wild Bill Hickok.
Right. She was okay. She was the love child.
Child, yeah. Right. So there's documents and paperwork that she's able to produce that says that she was legally married. Thank you very much, Kev. That she was legally married to Wild Bill Hickok. Right? Now, here's the thing. What did we say about Jane? She was functionally illiterate.
Right.
So now all of a sudden there's all these love letters.
So now she signed the documents and everything else.
Yeah. And she's got like 250 letters that were written to her by her mother, kind of a thing. She's like, oh, yeah, my mother kept... We were pen pals. And all that. Not really.
You know?
And she can't read or write, dude.
Right.
So those... everything here, the skeptics are kind of... They pretty much debunked that.
I like how Calamity James and Wild Bill kind of have like a Kermit and Miss Piggy kind of dynamic.
Back to the puppets.
She drives me crazy.
No, that's that holds up too.
Is it not an episode of American Loser where I don't make at least one Muppet reference? Well, like, come
dude,
on,
dude, I love it.
Your charm. That's perfect.
I'm a big Muppet guy.
That's right on target.
Again, Hog Ranch.
That's
do we not? Motherfucker.
Well, these supposed signed documents are pretty much debunked here. It also gets a little bit wild, pun intended, because Jane, get this. If you ask some of the people that knew Wild Bill, they said that he had absolutely no use for her, that she was like a nuisance to him. Okay? Then she's saying that, oh, this is, I cared so much for him. I was in, you know, in love with him. Then this woman saying, oh, they were secretly married, and I'm actually their love child, and all this other shit. Meanwhile, Wild Bill had just been married to another woman at that point
right.
already, so it's very doubtful that
would
happen.
And there's a lot of letters that Wild Bill wrote, because he was literate,
yes.
that he's writing to his wife and yes. everything else. And it was not that you would be writing your wife about this new love interest but in Calamity Jane, but...
Got this scrappy drunk chick always following me around.
Yeah, right.
It's weird.
Dresses in buckskin and dude's clothes.
Yeah, it's yeah. Well, she's a trip that way too, though, because Kahuna, guess where Calamity Jane wanted to be buried when she died?
Our own New Jersey?
a smart guess based off the ratios of information we've provided over the year or so. But she wanted to be buried next to Wild Bill Hickok. So imagine that. Imagine a girl who's in love with you that you're like, that's nice. Okay, I got my own thing going here. And she winds up getting buried next to you. Now, a couple of the people.
Nagged for all eternity.
That's literally what it was. One guy says, oh, yeah, we did that as a prank because Bill didn't really like her, so we figured it'd be hilarious if he stuck with her for
even
eternity.
Even after death, we're still yeah. breaking his stones.
And then it was her request to be buried that way. So it was the Black Hills Pioneer Society are the ones who went ahead and put that information in for her.
He's somewhere, and he's just like, kill me. I'm already dead.
Well, speaking of how he dies, I do want to get to this one little thing here.
Yeah, because there is in Wild Bill's death, there is a tie-in with Calamity
totally.
Jane.
Your guest just shot up like, oh, it's my time to shine.
No, I feel bad about bringing it up earlier.
No, you're good. That was perfect, because everybody kind of knows the story, man.
All right, so it wasn't anything that I brought to the table?
No. The dead man's hand, all that stuff is stuff people remember, but you're the one who gave them the information. So
that's right.
Jane is also said to have attacked Jack McCall with a meat cleaver. Real quick, though, Dad. Who's Jack McCall?
Jack McCall was a degenerate. Deadwood is all kinds of degenerates, so he was just one of many. He is notorious for his drunkenness and his stupidity. Was one quote that I found.
Did he host a podcast with his dad?
He's also known as Crooked Nose Jack. he was not a handsome man in that... long-haired, cross-eyed, double chin. He was not noted as being really sharp. But
just a side note, the actor who played him on Deadwood was so unrecognizable in his the makeup and everything that they did him with, and like rubbing dirt on his face and having the upturned nose and kind of a scar on his face, that same actor came back a season later playing a different character.
Oh, is that
no
right?
One, really? No one figured
Nobody
it out.
Picked yeah. it up.
Okay. You know who'd have made a good Calamity Jane? Ambi Davis from the Brady Bunch. Alice.
There you go.
I'm off to see the butcher.
Sam. Wild Sam.
Wild Sam.
Sorry, all right, go ahead. That's it. I'm done.
But it's one night, Hickok is in the saloon, and he's playing poker and winning big time.
That's right.
And Jack McCall is at the bar and just getting drunker and drunker. And then finally at the table, one guy gets up and leaves. Jack McCall asks to come in and sit in his place. They allow that to happen and then loses everything. Hickok is just winning hand after hand after hand. And this guy is shit-faced and he's losing nice. All his money and gets, you know, more agitated as the night goes on. At the end of the evening, after he's like cleaned out, Hickok gives him a couple of bucks so he can at least go buy breakfast. So, you know, Hickok is throwing him the bone kind of a thing. But McCall is definitely pissed off at this. He's like simmering. He's like fuming over this whole thing about it being disgraced at the poker table.
And Deadwood Hickok. Season one does a perfect. That's one thing they're absolutely historically accurate with.
So now McCall comes back the next day. He's still pissed off. Hickok always wanted to sit at a certain spot within the saloon so that he could see who's coming in the door. And this particular evening, somebody's sitting in his seat. So rather than make a big scene, Hickok sits, but now his back is to the door. And then McCall comes in. He's already liquored up because, again, he's a drunk. And he shoots Wild Bill Hickok in the back of the head, point-blank range, and kills him. And then tries to escape, runs out the door, jumps on somebody else's horse. The saddle that was on that horse wasn't cinched up tight, so like he falls on the ground.
He was a dumb shit.
Yeah, he was absolutely a dumb shit, a drunk dumb shit, and tries to get away. And then this is an Indian territory, so there's no real law and order kind of a thing. But the miners in the camp now form this.
Like a posse?
Well, no, they capture the guy because he just fell on the ground trying to get away.
Excuse me, gents, I'm trying to make my getaway.
Yeah, they appoint a judge, they appoint a jury, they appoint a defender for this guy within this camp. But again, there's no real law because they're illegal to begin with because they're in Indian territory. They're not in any state. So there's a whole trial that comes on for this Jack McCall, and he is found. He gets away, and then with that, there's rumors that Calamity Jane is going after this guy with a meat cleaver because she just killed the love of her life, Wild Bill Hickok. That's later proved to be BS because she was locked up someplace else, that there was no way that could have happened.
So Jane's, again, a little bit of a bullshit artist.
Right. You know, I bet if Jack had just eaten his breakfast and been grateful that Hickok had just given him money for it,
absolutely,
he would have been fine.
Absolutely.
But no.
Absolutely.
There was also something weird with McCall that when he went to try to shoot other people in the crowd, every other round in the revolver was a dud.
Oh, is that
it's
right?
It's a true story.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at his trial with these miners forming this, you know, quasi-trial thing, McCall claims that the reason he shot Hickok was not because of the poker game, but because Hickok had shot his brother earlier.
Yeah, total
and the other which was proven to be later on.
I didn't know
total
that part
bullshit.
Of the, I didn't know that part of the story.
Yeah.
It's a fabrication.
And Hickok was holding a pair of aces and a pair of eights. So aces and eights have always become known as the dead man's hand.
Yeah, and it's referenced all the time in poker
so cool.
Right. Ever since.
Right. And then, so that goes on today. McCall gets out. He goes off to the other territories in Wyoming. He starts bragging to anybody he meets. I killed Wild Bill Hickok. Mm-hmm. That he's using that as a bragging point. A lawman in that other territory. Now that he's back in legal U.S. territory and not in Indian territory, there's a second trial. Because that first one, it's not double indemnity that there's a second trial because
yep.
That first one was all bullshit. You were in Indian territory. So he's tried again while Bill's brother comes to that trial. They find this guy guilty, and it's later found out that in that first trial, he was claiming that he killed Wild Bill because Wild Bill killed his brother. That's total bullshit because he didn't have a brother.
Yep.
So, but they hang this guy and they bury him in a Catholic cemetery. Years later, they dig him up and they move the cemetery because they're going to put some hospital or some building in there. And when they dig the guy up, he still had the noose around his neck from when they buried him after the hanging. So,
dude was only 24.
Mr. Jack McCall got his just due for sure.
Now, do you know the name of the saloon that he was killed in, Kev?
That would be Egan's Saloon
in West Orange, New Jersey.
No, I don't. Sorry.
It was Nuttall's Number 10 Saloon.
That's
so Tom Nuttall was the guy. He was a character on Deadwood 2, a real-life character, but it was his... That was the place that he was shot at. You can still visit it. It still is a standing place over in Deadwood today.
That's cool.
But that being said here, so Wild Bill's dead now. All right, Deadwood is starting to get civilized a little bit here, slowly but surely. They're attempting to get recognized as no longer a territory. They want to be a state. Now the question is: are they going to become part of Montana? Are they going to be a South Dakota? Is there the Dakotas? This is wild. We take it all for granted right now because that's been settled since we've been born. But they didn't quite know what was going to go on with all this. Now she remains in Deadwood, so Jane's still hanging out over here.
Yeah, we're back to Calamity Jane.
Oh yeah,
we took a side,
but you have
a side
to.
Track.
It's such an important part of the
There's
story.
There's so many characters interwoven with Calamity Jane's life that you have to.
Well, Jane stays in Deadwood, like you said, Dad, and she, following the death of Wild Bill, her reputation is kind of similar to her reputation she had over at Fort Laramie. She is wild and devilish, but likable. People would see her drunk out all the time in the streets. She'd be just kind of passing out here or there, whatever. And she also maintained her friendship with Madame Dufresne.
Ooh.
And even worked for her for a while as a prostitute.
Right.
Okay. So
yeah, now Madame Dufresne noted herself for that she was only hiring good-looking prostitutes, and the girls had to be clean,
yes.
Whatever that might be.
Hmm.
But
yeah, what did that mean back then?
In hard times,
the bath a week kind of a thing.
Right.
So
right,
totally different definition nowadays.
Correct.
Correct.
No, it's just, yeah. you're right. But Jane has an interesting couple of highlights with her time in town here, Dad. She saves a stagecoach that's being attacked by Indians. She winds up saving the lives of almost everyone on board, except unfortunately that while she's diverting these Plains Indians that are attacking the stagecoach, the Native Americans are able to kill the driver. And so because he's dead now, the guy's dead in the stagecoach.
The driver of the stage is dead.
So now Calamity Jane is going to throw herself from her horse onto the stagecoach. Okay, heroically, then take the reins and bravely drive the stagecoach back into town, saving everyone on board.
Now, did she actually do that, or is that...
Well, hang on. No, it says that there was a source here. Oh, shit, it was her, too. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Was it really, one of her... apparent this happened, or like...
Well, that again,
or
that
this
one's
not
up for
known?
It's up for debate. It could be, because now here's the thing: there could be 10% truth to every lie that she tells.
She might have driven a stage at one time into town, and everybody was saved on board. But she was fighting off Indians,
some Native Americans might have seen her and then said, "Oh, there's people here. Let's get out of here."
I'm so intrigued, and this might be a question to tie the bow on the whole episode. But on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you think she was in the bullshit meter?
Ooh. Buddy, no one knows.
In your personal opinion, KP.
It's
and then I'll
the fact that she's able to, because there's a couple other weird things here too.
This might be a question to tie the
bow. Let's get to the end and we'll ask that question, because
that's a good question.
There's more things that are going to pin the bullshit meter.
We're wrapping up here, Cahoons.
No, ignore this. I'm literally the...
It's funny because Kahuna's like, he goes, "Guys, relax. Don't pay any attention to the sign I'm waving towards you." The sign says, "Wrap up. You have 5 minutes left." He goes, "It's just a fan." But she's also credited with, and this one has been pretty much confirmed as true, there's this diabolical smallpox outbreak in town that nearly ruins, I believe it's back when Deadwood is still a camp. They're not even a town yet.
Right.
And smallpox... still no laughing matter, but back then that was a death sentence. That was the AIDS of its day, if you will. And smallpox is just running through town like crazy, and Jane is, let me help take care of some of these people, man. She was working as a nurse, trying to keep these people healthy, get them back up on their feet, make them comfortable if they were too far gone. So she's got a lot of good in her. There's a good heart here, but she's wild. And she is a drunkard beyond drunkards. So... Kev, I'm sure at some of your, I know you're the mayor of West Orange,
That's
so you're bouncing around to the different establishments. There's always there's always those guys that you know it's time for them to go home when they just rah!
Oh yeah,
not even words anymore.
100%.
That's right. No.
First of all, they come in not saying words. It's actually when they start speaking words. That's what they do. You have to throw them out. When they actually start making sense, that's when it's time to go.
Well, that's why Kevin's a good bartender. He knows when. Yeah.
When they make sense, it's time to go.
Yeah, you gotta go.
We're advice to live by.
Because this isn't like you. That's at all.
Right. Well, she also, not for nothing, she has a big heart here, but she also can be kind of cruel at times. So the she helped procure 10 girls in a single trip to Nebraska. She goes to Nebraska and comes back with 10 women, 10 relatively attractive women, through nefarious means. Some people say that maybe they were drugged or coerced, and they were brought into a life of prostitution at the infamous Gem Saloon, which burned down in Deadwood but was rebuilt as a theater, I believe, owned by Deadwood's most notorious resident. Kahuna, did you ever watch an episode of Deadwood?
No, never.
I'm telling you, one of my favorite shows of all time, and the lead character, if you will, the guy who is the scene-stealing son of a bitch in the entire thing, is Ian McShane as Al Swearengen, who is a real-life character.
Okay.
He was a pimp. He was kind of running the town. He was the boss of the camp, if you will. And Jane,
he had me at pimp.
It's a Jane worked for him as a dancing girl at the Gem Saloon. And that was one of his first dancers. And she, so again, depending on what view you have of Calamity Jane, if you want to paint her as heroic or anything like that, or a kind soul, she's also showing up in human trafficking 10 women to come now work as prostitutes far away from Nebraska where they were.
I'm surprised it wasn't a story like, I saved them from a stagecoach, and they devoted their lives to me.
Well, that was the passengers on the stagecoach, and she drove them into town.
Yeah, dude, that really would be, oh, man, that's a Pandora's box. But yeah, so Jane was, again, rough looking, but because of the slim picking, she was able to work as a prostitute again here and there if she needed to. Total booze hound. Kev, what's your best drunk story?
I don't remember.
Well played.
There you go.
Kev was present for one of my worst moments, Dad. Kev was in the VIP section with me at a certain 80s nightclub in Atlantic City, New Jersey, right, where I tore my ACL on the VIP section.
Wildwood.
And had to be wheelchaired out.
That's a story for a little later.
Oh, don't worry. But when I tell it on stage, so we'll get
you. Haven't told that on the show yet?
No. Well, I'm not going to do my material on the show.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
But we'll get Cahoon's out to one of my upcoming gigs. But Jane's a total booze hound. There's two main stories about her legendary alcoholism. Dad, not for nothing. Sometimes you lose track of time.
Well, there has been some times where God was my co-pilot and he took the wheel.
Same, Larry. Same.
Well, Jane was once so blackout drunk on a horse and buggy trip that she took with the intent to go, I believe, an hour and a half ride she was going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
She wound up missing her exit, if you will.
You're right.
And and going 70 miles in the wrong direction. In a rented horse and buggy.
On a horse and buggy, right.
Ming Chen in the building, guys. So, new location, by the way, for our Shared Universe Studios. You guys, how long is the Asbury one staying open for?
Right now, tentatively, to the end of February. They're hinting March is a possibility, which would be cool. Because it's going to get warm in March.
Foot traffic, awesome. Baby. Foot traffic.
And beyond that, who knows? So,
we want to do one in there.
Yeah,
in
let's the do it. Okay. Let's do it. Why not?
We'll figure
Why not?
It out. Hell yeah, man. So, Ming Chen, the boss doesn't come in all the time, dude, guys. That's exciting.
I walked into the other studio to tap us off on these beers, these Ross Brewing Company beers, and he was there. I'm just like, all right. I don't know what to do with myself right now.
Are you short round?
No. I shook his hand and said, nice to meet you. I'm with the American Loser. And I'm here. No, he's like, help yourself.
Dude, they've been so great to us, man. I love it. It's again, it's a ride to come to the studio.
I just wasn't expecting to see him. Threw me for a loop.
It's exciting, man. We'll get you in another episode, too, when him and Michael come in and hang out and guest. But that's the first legendary story. 70 miles in the wrong direction.
Oops. Okay.
Completely screwed that one up. And that's not... We may have traveled 70 miles coming here today, all right? And that was in a car, and that still took an hour and a half.
Right.
Imagine doing that on a horse and buggy.
That's sleeping it off, waking up.
That's a blackout, and the horse knew the way.
Yeah,
that's, it just kept going.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised the horse kept going. That's
what horses do.
Jesus, take the wheel. And here's the other wildest one. This one is half hilarious, half heartbreaking. She arrives back in Deadwood with one of her two daughters. Okay, now neither child's father is known. One was put up for adoption immediately, and Dad, you know how bad of a situation that is. You know, should be lemon laws on adoption, if you ask me. That's
ask the man who owns one.
Exactly. Two. One was put up for adoption immediately. The other one arrived back in Deadwood with Jane. Jane arrives in town, says, "Hey, this is my daughter." And she goes, "I want us to do can we do a benefit show at the theater here in order to raise some money for my daughter? I want to make sure that she's getting educated at this one Catholic school, but it's over in Sturgis. I don't have the money. Guys, I've always been a good person here in town. I'm, you know, the unofficial mayor, if you will.
Helped out with the smallpox outbreak.
Yeah, and saved you from the wagons. I blew half of you." So Calamity Jane goes ahead, and they start doing this benefit show for her. And it's at a local theater, raises a ton of money, all right? And they pay her back, and they're like, "Wow, your daughter's going to get to go to this Catholic boarding school in Sturgis." Until Jane spends the majority of the money she made for the benefit getting loaded in the saloon that night.
That night, right.
Oh, yeah.
She drank the benefit.
Yeah, what was it called? Drinking your paycheck, pretty much.
It.
Yeah, she was doing that. You want to talk about drunken mistakes. Jane marries a man named Clinton Burke. You don't marry a Burke unless you're making mistakes.
Yeah. So. I can't go right.
Have you guys done the Ancestry.com to make sure that you're...
Well, it's always interesting, too, because Clinton Burke is from... Now, Burke as a last name is like Smith in Ireland. That's what we found out.
Right. My dad's famous line was there's two different kinds of Burkes. There's royalty Burkes, and then there's sheep stealers. And you got to figure out which one you're dealing with right now.
the truth Burkes.
I kind of wonder what... the truth. He had to sneak it in there. Well, this Clinton Burke was from Texas. And then the two of them get married, and they wind up spending some time out in Boulder, Colorado. They also owned a small ranch over in Montana on the Yellowstone River, of all places. But her fame is still the subject of these newspaper magazines and these dime store novels, which makes her a star attraction as a storyteller. Now, she's already hanging out with Wild Bill Hickok. You think there's another... Is there another Bill about to come into her life, Kahuna? I see you found it on Wikipedia.
There's a certain Bill named Buffalo Bill.
Now, I believe Buffalo Bill said, "Would you fuck me? I'd fuck me." So, goodbye, horses.
I hate you because that's going to be stuck in my head for the car ride home.
Wrong. Aww. Buffalo Bill. This is Buffalo Bill Cody, who has a Wild West show. And, Kev, this really is almost like there's vaudeville popping off at the time. There's these this traveling Western show. These are all things that get borrowed into what winds up becoming professional wrestling.
100%.
So yeah. You add a little bit of carnival flair to it, and that's the recipe, brother.
You got the circuses, you got the Wild West shows, mm-hmm. You've got, you know, the P.T. Barnum aspect of this whole thing, and a lot of these famous Western personalities are now trying to make a buck off of what happened 30 years ago.
Very true. Now, she's during these, you know, Wild West shows, she's a storyteller. She's just going out there, and she's telling her own bullshit. That's great. She's doing material.
Right.
You know what I mean? She's a comic.
But she also has her dime, not what they call dime novels. In other words, these little pamphlet, softcover pamphlets that she was selling at the same time. So she's trying to make a buck off of
it's
her.
It's called merch.
Yeah,
she's selling merch.
She's selling merch.
She had the merch table at the end.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, $30 for a t-shirt, $30 for a flat-brimmed hat.
$25 for a combo.
It's a but she's depressed. She's drinking as bad as she's ever been drinking at this point. Now, Jane returns to the Black Hills in 1903 and continues working for her friend Madame Dufresne, though no longer as a working girl anymore.
She was also in the
Pan-American
Games. Yeah. Not games, but the Pan-American Exposition.
She played short stuff
in Buffalo, but which was a major league thing. But she's really at the end of the trail here, too, with her drinking and everything else. And she's actually fired from that because you know, she's not showing up, or just she's a drunk.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought she got fired because they didn't have a blow-in competition.
No.
No. Another bit I can't do on this show, but only Kev would appreciate that. You too, Dad. You've seen it before. Kahuna doesn't come out to my shows because he doesn't support me. He only hangs out with me when I pay him to.
I'm a big fan of the Kahuna, by the way.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. Everybody, people fall in love instantly when they're here on the show, man. It's like we said, she returns to the Black Hills. Her drinking has reached another level, and she becomes seriously ill on a train ride to Terry, South Dakota. Now, the train arrives in Terry, and the conductor literally carries her almost unconscious body off there. The bartender at the bar that they bring her into gets her a hotel room, okay? And she dies on August 1st, 1903, at age 51, of inflammation of the bowels and pneumonia.
Yeah, there again, that's really not concrete evidence as to what exactly did she die from. Because there's
tough
a number
to do autopsies. Yeah.
Tough to do autopsies on what they were calling for back then and what we're calling it today or what exactly it really was. Who knows? But, yeah, inflammation of the bowels and pneumonia, probably a pretty good start with you know, chronic drinking problems from a lifetime of boozing.
Well, there's a line that I heard once used to describe when a famous person passed away. I can't remember which one it was, but a chronic substance abuse problem. And they said, so-and-so died. And, you know, somebody just goes, well, actually, it was Uncle Paulie that said, he goes, well, they spent enough time working on it. So.
Right, right.
But, yeah, Jane's now dead, age 51. And she's taken back to Deadwood. And her funeral is this morbid curiosity. So there's people that like her and remember, and then there's Deadwood's getting civilized at this point. It's a real town again. So the morbid curiosity floods the churches, okay, the church that her funeral is at, and there's people marching down to bury her in Boot Hill. Now, what's Boot Hill, just in 10 seconds or less, Dad?
Boot Hill is the pauper's grave, if you will. That's the city cemetery.
That's why it's a status symbol to own your plot.
Right,
you
know? Right.
Otherwise,
right.
We're going to throw you in the dirt.
Right.
But she gets buried. They take her down towards Boot Hill, but her request from the Black Hill Pioneer Society, who understood her contributions to the town, they honored her request to be buried next to Wild Bill Hickok, like we said. And the two of them are buried next to each other in Deadwood, South Dakota.
I thought earlier in the show you said that his friends decided to play a posthumous joke on him by burying her next to him.
That depends on who you talk to, yeah.
Yeah, I thought you were making that up.
Nope.
And apparently that turns out to be true.
100%
So true. I'm reading this. Whenever we do the show, I always follow along on Wikipedia to kind of stay on track. But I didn't expect to see that, so I'm like, oh no, he was telling the truth.
Yep, they just to mess with her.
I hope my friends play jokes like that on me when I'm gone.
Here's the example I'm going to try to use, and I hope this pop culture reference will hold up. Oops. Remember Wayne's girlfriend from Wayne's World?
Yes.
Yes.
Imagine if, as a joke, they buried her next to Wayne.
Oh, my God. I don't even own a gun.
Wayne, I realize why I've been so moody lately. I'm pregnant. She's dead now. She's buried next to what she had alluded to being the love of her life. Kahuna just pulled up a picture of her next to the grave there, where Wild Bill was buried first.
Joke's on you, lady. You're there in a few years.
That's a a rare photo of Jane wearing a dress, too.
Smiling.
Yeah, and a lot of that, I found some references to that there's most of the pictures of her, she's in men's clothing, but there was whether that was like a publicity type of a thing or whether she was truly wearing dresses on her own accord is another side of that whole mystery.
Are you
mystery.
Telling me that we can't really tell what was real and what was fake with this lady?
Well, right from the get-go, yeah.
There are two things I notice about this photo, too, that's kind of bugging me out. One, she's going to end up there in a few years anyway. So, and then two, from what everything we've talked about with Calamity Jane is that, like, she's her own publicist. Like, she's nuts when it comes to that stuff. Like, she'll make up the stories and embellish. wasn't it a huge deal to take pictures back in the day? So behind this photo is just like a huge setup of like...
That's a good point.
That's a great point. Yeah. And the fact that she's posing,
and she's posing and smiling, which I don't think I've ever seen in like an old photo.
Which you have to stand still very, very long and you would have, like, for these photos.
Yeah, but by this time, though, by the 1901, 02, or whenever this was taken.
1890s.
She died in 1903. Yeah, it's not like Civil War time where they actually having a headrest for you to not move.
Your industrial revolution has taken place. Right, everything, right. You're good to go there. Yeah, solid point.
Smarter than us, that's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what. She's dead now. She's buried next to her boyfriend. And but what's interesting is that she's such a good bullshit artist that the stories about her are still getting printed. Magazines are running articles. Magazines are starting to come out around this time. The dime store museums now have dime store novels, like you were saying too, Dad, that she is a regular feature in. Because what writer wouldn't love a premise like that? Oh, the lady cowboy.
Yeah, and the dime novels were just generating one after the other. They would take the same story and slap a different color. Color was a big thing to put the at least the cover of these dime novels in a color to draw attention to it, or they would just change the cover on the same old story and re-release it over and over and over again, and they're still making money on this whole thing. But people are eating this stuff up, so it's the shopper rags that you see at the checkout counter that that's really what it was. It's for the common person, the lowbrow reader.
The lowbrow, the working lowbrow class reader. People. Well, what's the next thing that's about to come? You got the radio that's about to pop up. She's going to have the serials on radio, of which she was a regular on. And then there's the other new exciting invention, television, and the talkies, right? So got a lot of stuff coming on over here. Jane has been played. She's got, like, she becomes a mainstay for TV and movie westerns. That's how I heard about her. Well, she was always mentioned because I like.
Yeah, I mean, even after her death, her legend just grew bigger and bigger and bigger.
Like Kev said, she sounds like a pro wrestler.
Right.
You're not going to, hang on, what'd you say your name was again? My name is Captain Chaos. Why are you driving the super? But Jane becomes a mainstay on the TV and movie westerns, and most of these decide that they're going to follow a less accurate and more kind of a mythical or mystical presentation of Calamity Jane. So some of the actresses that have portrayed Calamity Jane would include Catherine O'Hara, Kevin McAllister's mom from Home Alone, all right, Ellen Barkin, a very attractive woman, Jane Alexander, a very attractive woman, Angelica Houston, no comment. Jane Russell, who was
certainly a smoke shop.
She was gorgeous.
Yeah. She was the brunette Monroe. That they would cast the two of them together. Absolutely. I think sometimes if you wanted to have, do blondes really have more fun? I have a theory on that. And then Jean Arthur, as Kahuna pointed out, Yvonne DiCarlo of the Munsters would portray her. Another person that would portray her would be Frances Farmer, okay, who will be an episode of this show. Her story is so fascinating. Cahoons, are you a Nirvana fan? Okay. Kev?
A little bitsy.
All right, there's a Nirvana song called Frances Farmer Will Have Her Revenge. And she was a beautiful young starlet who then got forcefully taken to a psychiatric facility and had a forced lobotomy done on her.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's pretty wild stuff. But and then most famously, obviously, she was played by Robin Weigert on the HBO classic show Deadwood. Now, Deadwood gave her the most accurate portrayal. It wasn't historically accurate, but they did play her up. Now, this is where the contrast comes in. I left the one name out that I know you're waiting for, Dad. I know you're waiting. The one name I left out here is because, so Robin Weigert's Calamity Jane on Deadwood is accurate. She's gruff. She's wearing the men's clothes. She's a drunk. She's farting and burping in people's faces.
Sexy.
She's covered in dirt. She curses. She curses poetically on that show.
Right.
It is.
Also, she is from New Jersey.
Well, make a long.
There's one episode of Deadwood where her only line of dialogue is that she's passed out on her horse on the outskirts of town that she went to get a drunk on or whatever. And she's passed out on the horse, and someone rides past her, and she just pops up and just goes, "Cocksucker!" And that's her entire line for the entire episode. It was just so good. But she gives us like kind of a more true to spirit version of Calamity Jane here. Now, if you want to take that in 100 and as far removed from a rough looking chick here, Dad, is there a certain blonde, gorgeous, just dime piece?
It was the heartthrob of the 50s,
yeah.
and later into the 60s. Yeah, to me personally, I think the pinnacle of absurdity for female characters to play Calamity Jane's role would be in a 1953 musical with Doris Day. I mean, this chirpy little blonde is now playing this hell-bent for leather, Calamity Jane character. That Doris Day, really? You're going to put Doris Day as a Calamity Jane? I don't think so.
It's a, well, not for nothing. If Doris Day was blowing guys at an army base,
there would be a line 3 miles.
I would have heard about it. So, but yeah, Cahoon's pulling up the photos here. It's almost like a fantasy for a guy, you know, where it's just a beautiful woman is this like tough frontiers woman kind of a thing. And Cahoon is going back and forth between the Doris Day photo of her and like the buckskin looking like Davy Crockett.
I'm gonna have an epileptic seizure right now.
Yeah.
But you got to feel like that depiction of Calamity Jane has just got to be to sell, I guess, tickets.
Oh, totally. Why wouldn't it sell? Yeah. Doris Day was one of the biggest stars of her day.
100%.
And you got a great story that hasn't been told yet in a motion picture. So you're going to go with it. And again, they made it a musical, too.
Yeah, so
right,
yeah,
musical.
Yeah.
Right.
I killed some minions, sucked some dick, doo-dah.
Yeah, so I don't think people...
And then I woke up on my horse and screamed, cocksucker.
People suspended their disbelief for that one, probably.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll tell you what right now. If you wanted to make a fantasy movie for me involving Calamity Jane, and I was Bill Hickok, I would want to be Bill Hickok, and my Calamity Jane would be none other than Carrie Underwood. That's where I'm going, guys, all right?
Country singer?
Oh, yeah, Sunday
Night
Football.
Tony Romo's ex?
Tony Romo's ex. Why would you ruin that? Why are you doing this?
I'm trying to... listen, I talk things out to remember who people are. So I had no idea who Carrie Underwood was, so I started talking.
Well, no worries on that one, dude. Hey, I'll tell you what, though. We're getting ready to wrap up here. LP, do you have anything else you want to throw in real quick?
No, I think that's pretty much covered.
We hammered that one. We're going to be right at our 90-minute mark, which means we only went over by a half hour, guys.
That's right. I know who I'd cast as Calamity Jane.
That's what I want to throw. I'm excited. Right back. We haven't been doing it as diligently as we should, but this is a regular segment on the show from here on out. Kahuna's casting couch. Who you got, buddy?
All right. So I'm not going for the Doris Day approach, which is just take someone beautiful and insert them into a legend. Well, not to say. She might be beautiful to some.
If you say Caitlyn Jenner, I'm off this podcast.
No. I'm going to go Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, dude. And you made a comedy with...
Yeah.
If you made a comedy with Melissa McCarthy as Calamity Jane... I would watch that in a heartbeat. I think that would be a funny movie.
I think that'd be great. Who would you cast in this comedy as Wild Bill Hickok?
That's a good Bill Hader.
Oh my God!
Because the man can't do anything wrong. He's our second coming of Bill Murray. There's nothing they're bad in.
Yeah, I'm about it. So let's talk after this. Let's get this made.
I'm into it. Yeah, I'm into it. LP, you did some great research on this one, man. Thank you so much for breaking down the Jack McCall thing, explaining Wild Bill. And we didn't burn, and we gave enough info without burning future episodes here. So if this episode does well, we'll look into doing a couple others. That being said, Kev, Royal Rumble predictions. Talk to me.
All right. So you got two Royal Rumble matches, right? Female Royal Rumble? Are you really asking for this?
No, we don't have to do this.
We don't have to do this here. Let's wrap it up.
But you have a great podcast, man, that I enjoy. I like being a guest on it. I also listen to it. So
plug
that
shit.
So why don't you tell the listeners where they can, if you guys like professional, even if you're not a current fan of the product and you just like the old school days, these guys talk about both enough that it's enjoyable.
We talk about everything from like the 80s, the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s to today. We've had guests like Mick Foley, AJ Styles, Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho.
All right, you don't need to show off.
I'm just trying to throw these people.
I was very jealous of Jericho.
I don't necessarily know if this audience translates to wrestling, so I just want to throw that out
it's
there.
It's definitely a shared universe.
That's a good point. My man, Pots and Pants.
But
ShiningWizards.com.
Throw you out.
ShiningWizards.com. Just check us out, man. We hope, listen, thank you guys so much. And this was great. Kahuna, thank you. Everyone here, thank you.
No problem. Thank also, you. Just for a disclaimer, it's ShiningWizards.com, not GrandWizards.com.
Not GrandWizards.com.
It'll take you to a very different website.
Nope. Or Imperial Wizards.
And, yeah. They can find you on Twitter and Instagram, correct?
Yeah, Wizards Podcast on Twitter, at Wizards Podcast on Instagram. And
where can they follow you, friend?
At Kevin Garifo on Twitter. It's silly. I don't know how to change it. at Shining Wizards Kevin on Instagram. So
very cool, man.
Appreciate it very much, man.
No, buddy, you're one of my great friends in this world. So it was a very honor to have you come on the show finally. So thank you for that.
It was great. I hope I did well.
Well, you're coming back. I hate to tell you.
Yeah. All right? And, you're in trouble.
Again, thank you to our sponsor over at Ross Brewing, Navasink IPA, Dad. If you're signing
good
off,
stuff. Good
you
stuff.
Like the West
tremendous
Coast IPA.
I'm on my sixth cup.
That's
we weren't counting.
I never finished my first cup, so anytime Kevin got up, I would hand him a half a beer to have him fill it back up. So I lost track, too. Don't
Lord,
worry.
Let Calamity Jane take the wheel.
That's right.
Now, we're going to get the hell out of here.
Hopefully,
man.
We won't be 70 miles beyond our exit on the way home.
Oh, God. Any traffic, we're going to have to get out of the car and pee in Ziploc bags.
Should oh, my God. Them. That scene alone with Melissa McCarthy and Bill Hader would just be worth it. I'm going to write this now and hope to
I'm
God.
I'm okay with you doing it, buddy.
All I'm going to make it like Blazing Saddles.
I just want a special thanks. Funny. Special thanks is all I ask for.
I got you. I got you. And a walk-on roll.
That's or just, you know, Carrie Underwood's phone number. Whatever you come up with first.
I got you. Oh, she'll play, she could play...
the Madam.
Yeah, Dora?
Dufresne,
yeah.
So, not bad on that one, man. So, I think we're sitting on a couple of gold mines here. But that being said, guys, Mike and Ming, thank you so much for taking care of us here. Shared Universe Studio, you guys make this happen. You really do. It's fantastic. If you guys like the show, it's America Loser Podcast on Instagram. And if you really like us, the best way to help us out, we're giving you all this shit for free, all right? My father's retired. I make him write a research paper once a week.
Really? Absolutely.
He's getting ready to go down to Florida, spend a little time with, you know, he and my mother like to go down there and spend their winters. Well-earned, too, all right? But South Beach Larry is returning, which is great for him. However, we're not going to have LP on for a couple of weeks here. So, guys, what I ask of you is if you like the show, again, it's all for free. Just leave us a written review over on iTunes. It helps us out a lot. It helps build us up in the rankings. We're trying to do that. I don't want to charge for the show, okay? But it does cost me money to do this every week. And if you guys like it, that's all I'm asking for right now. So do me a favor. And if you feel like checking me out on Instagram or Twitter, at KP Burke Sucks. We had a listener in South Africa. I thought he was a really nice guy, and then he unfollowed me. So we have to do what we do there. And we're finally getting listeners in Ireland, Dad. So the home country's finally proud of you.
All right.
Okay? And which is ironic because the Burks were asked to leave Ireland. So. But anyway, guys, thank you so much. This was a great episode. Coons, thanks for everything you do, brother. And guys, that was Calamity Jane, American Loser.
An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born. American loser the day I was born.